Next case for argument is EEOC versus North Memorial Healthcare.
Thank you. May it please the court, Julie Gantz on behalf of the EEOC. In this case, Seventh-day Adventist nurse Emily Shirandaro requested to be excused from working the Friday night shift at the defendant's hospital because it conflicted with her Sabbath, which disallows secular work from sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. North Memorial withdrew her job offer even after she repeatedly said she would accept the position with or without accommodation. This court should reverse the district court's holding that her request for religious accommodation is not protected activity under Title VII's anti-retaliation provision. Treating requests for accommodation as protected opposition to unlawful behavior is supported by the text of the statute, the Supreme Court's broad interpretation of the word oppose, consistent with the anti-retaliation provision's objective to protect workers who assert their Title VII rights, and consistent with Title VII's larger purpose to secure workplaces free of discrimination. Title VII makes it unlawful for an employer to discriminate against an employee or applicant because she has opposed a practice made unlawful by Title VII or that she reasonably believes is unlawful. Shirandaro's request for accommodation necessarily conveyed her opposition to North Memorial's requirement that she work on her Sabbath in violation of her religious beliefs when North Memorial could accommodate her. The unlawful activity she was opposing was the denial of a reasonable accommodation. The Supreme Court in Crawford explained that the term oppose must be given its ordinary meaning, and the court attributed several dictionary definitions to the term, including to be hostile or adverse as an opinion. The Crawford court said oppose goes beyond active, consistent behavior in ordinary discourse, where we would naturally use the term, the word to speak of someone who has taken no action at all to advance a position beyond disclosing it. The court held that an employee who answered questions about a harasser's inappropriate behavior during an internal investigation was protected by the opposition clause, even though she did not overtly communicate that she thought the harassment she reported was illegal. Here, Shirandaro's request for religious accommodation similarly can be read as resistant or antagonistic to working the Friday night shift in conflict with her Sabbath. There are many ways to communicate opposition to
an employee.
Correct, Your Honor. She was an applicant.
She's applying for a job, and one of whose requirements is work on her Sabbath at least sometimes.
Correct. So when she requested to have Friday,
qualified for that job.
It wasn't a matter of whether she said she would do the job with or without accommodation. She said repeatedly that she would make it work. She would come in on her shift, and withdrew her request for accommodation. But then she was punished for making the request in the first place. That's the problem here. She was fully qualified to do the job, and she testified that she. She testified that she had made.
I don't think the job applicant is the same as an employee in this situation.
But they're covered in the same regard in the retaliation statute. It talks about an individual. They cannot discriminate against an individual. So she is protected in the same regard, and the retaliation statute covers applicants.
I just don't understand. If you apply for a job that requires work on your Sabbath, And you say, well, I need an accommodation, and then they say, well, we can't accommodate because we got to have workforce on your Sabbath. And she says, oh, well, never mind, just hire me and I'll come in and we'll make it work.
Well, she testified at length that she had made peace with working on her Sabbath because she was going to give part of her salary to the church. She really needed the job.
The employer says, I can't take that. I can't buy into that kind of.
Did she communicate? Excuse me.
The employer doesn't have to do that.
It does, Your Honor.
Case with a job applicant is similar.
The job applicant is covered exactly in the same way as an employee. That's what the statute says. It says an individual.
Doesn't talk about job applicants.
Yes,
the agency does.
The statute. Excuse me, one second.
They're protected.
The language of the statute says it's an unlawful employment practice to discriminate against an employee or applicant because he has opposed any practice made in an unlawful employment practice by this subchapter.
About needing a workforce on some people's Sabbath.
That's correct. It's a neutral rule that potentially could be an employment could be discriminatory as applied to her, short of undue hardship. But this is not a failure to accommodate claim. She withdrew her accommodation request. What happened is she was punished for asserting her right to request an accommodation under the statute. That's why this is a retaliation claim and not a failure to accommodate.
That's the funniest made-up claim I can imagine.
It fits into the language of the statute. She identified a conflict with her religious beliefs with a work requirement, and then she opposed a practice she reasonably believed was unlawful because she thought she was entitled to an accommodation. Just because the employer could not accommodate her doesn't mean she wasn't protected by this other provision of Title VII. So just like in the case in Aulis.
Give me your best job applicant case.
I don't know that there is a job applicant case, but the court. This is very much like the case in Aulis versus Hearthstone Homes, where an employee asked for an exception to a job requirement to attend these mind-body-energy sessions that he said conflicted with his religion as a Christian, and he was ultimately fired later when he did not go to these sessions. So just like those mind-body-energy sessions, the employer was perfectly allowed.
Couldn't be further from this situation.
It's almost exactly the same. This court affirmed the jury verdict, saying that he had offered enough evidence of retaliation because he had identified a conflict with his religious beliefs.
He was on the job, and there was all kinds of a basis to infer retaliation.
The statute covers applicants in the same regard, and she withdrew her request for accommodation.
Can I ask a question about that withdrawal, please?
Yes.
Here's the issue that I have is that she applies for the job. She then indicates that she needs to be accommodated for the Sabbath. She's told that we really don't have the ability to do that consistent with the collective bargaining agreement and with the job duties that are required. She says, "Well, I'll withdraw it. I'll make it work." Right.
Correct.
And she said, and if I have to come in for an emergency, I will. She has one belief of what she meant by saying that. The employer says they believe something else.
That's correct.
And where I'm a little bit fuzzier on is when did she communicate to the employer this other theory that she arrived at, that really I can solve my Sabbath problem by just contributing the money or some part of the money to the church? When was that communicated?
Well, she actually testified to that in her deposition after this litigation
right.
was initiated.
So,
but she did
But no one's a mind reader, so we really can't consider that fact.
Agreed, right? Your Honor. But in her the email correspondence, I don't know if you read that in the record, of November 20th, when she was told that the job offer was being withdrawn, she wrote a lengthy email and four to five times said that she will take it without accommodation many times, and she testified that she made known repeatedly that she was willing to take the job with or without accommodation and that she really, really wanted the job. But they testified that the HR individuals just didn't believe that she was really going to appear on Friday nights. But this is also a summary judgment record, so the facts should be taken in the light most favorable to the commission, and there is substantial evidence that she made known repeatedly that she would take the job with or without accommodation, and that she was also rated a very, very highly in her interview, considered a great applicant. For someone that they actually wanted to hire, it's inexplicable why they wouldn't have given her the benefit of the doubt, assigned her to her schedule. And then if there was a problem with her attendance, then they would have been certainly within their rights to fire her at that point. But to withdraw her job offer that after she withdrew her request for accommodation is the problem here. She was asserting a right that is specified in Title VII to request an accommodation. Even as an applicant, she is protected by that part of the statute.
And so basically when she said that, I'll find someone to cover for me, or in an emergency, I'll come in. And that should be ignored when she later says, listen, I withdraw my request for any accommodation.
Well, I don't know if you would ignore it, Your Honor, but it seems like there were a lot of miscommunications in this whole hiring process. She was, in her mind, she was saying, it's an emergency. for in my situation, like it's I will go in and work on my Sabbath because I really need this job and I want this job. So for her, she was planning to go in if she couldn't find someone to switch with her. They understood that to mean that if someone's dying and she's absolutely needed, then she'll be there. But again, and the other, so it's more of a, she tried to clarify in these email correspondence that she was going to work without the accommodation, yet they still withdrew the job offer from her. So that was, so our case is that she was asserting her right. It's not a failure to accommodate claim, but that she was still punished, even though she said, I will work the shift that I have been assigned, and that they should have then reinstated her job offer.
Does it make any difference that the employer might have looked at the mixed message that was being sent between the first statements and the letter and just said, we're just not sure?
Well, this is a... That they would be, they could certainly tell a jury that, but these are factual issues about what actually happened. And here, the district court only decided this case on this legal issue on whether what she, her clear request for an exception to this work requirement because of religious reasons qualified as protected opposition. That's why this case should be looked at under the Supreme Court's case in Crawford, which did not require an overt statement that I believe my rights are being violated. The court there showed that it was implicit in the plaintiff there who was reporting on harassment that may or may not have risen to an illegal violation. That in that case, she didn't, just like Sharandara, didn't specifically say, you can't do that, you're violating my rights, but she, by identifying a conflict with her religious beliefs, showed that she was opposing having to work on her Sabbath when the hospital could potentially accommodate her. So again, it should be looked at fitting into the opposition clause of the statute. I see.
How can it be retaliation when the employer, prospective employer, then looked to see if there was a non-union position that she could fill?
Well, that's, again, another factual dispute. They didn't make any real attempt to find her another job at the hospital. They really believed that there was no job there open to her because of the collective bargaining agreement or potentially because they just didn't want to deal with a seven-day Adventist that might need an accommodation. So, again, that's all that would have to be developed and go to a jury on what they were actually...
on the summary judgment record for they didn't really look very hard.
Well, that she wasn't ever hired for any positions, and she testified that she was applied for jobs that she didn't even have the minimum qualifications for. So it seemed like a pretty empty.
I just asked you for a record cite. I'm not familiar.
We cited all that.
It's all phony. What's in the red brief?
What's all phony?
Well, the notion that we tried to. I mean, that would have been an accommodation.
To find her another position?
Yes.
It doesn't take away the fact that they withdrew the job that she had accepted because she requested a reasonable accommodation. Under the statute, she is still protected, and that she ended up not being offered a job of any kind. Moreover, the HR head, Renee Conklin, testified that had she been an employee...
Go on the record and look at this aspect of
it. Well, I don't have a record site handy, Your Honor, but...
No, dig it out.
I'm sorry about that. But the Renee Conklin testified that had she been a current employee, they would have done what they could to accommodate her. So the hospital was highly irritated, which I know you are as well, Judge Loken, that she requested the accommodation after she knew that it included nights and weekends. So they were definitely punishing her for requesting this accommodation. But there's no reason to think that she knew about the collective bargaining agreement or knew that it would be difficult for her. She testified that she had...
I don't think the employer was irritated.
The employer was certainly irritated. They said repeatedly, as we told you multiple times, it requires nights and weekends. She also offered to work the Sunday night shift, so she wasn't trying to get out of weekend work. So she did offer to try to work with them. And she's testified that she withdrew her request immediately and didn't make a bigger deal about this miscommunication that was going on because she didn't want to create bad blood. She didn't want to be too aggressive because she really, really wanted to work there. So the idea that she had to do more to fall under the opposition clause is not supported by Crawford or this court's decision in Aulis. And I see my time is up. Thank you.
Yes, good morning. May it please the court. I'm Karen Shanfield. I'm appearing today on behalf of North Memorial Health, along with my colleague, Pari Magara. We're from the Fredrickson and Byron Law Firm. I think it's important to be clear about what is and isn't at stake here. This is not a case in which North Memorial is accused of not providing a reasonable accommodation. The EEOC has not pursued that claim, nor has it pursued the claim of discrimination, that Ms. Shirandara was treated differently because of her religion or because of her practices. The only thing that's at stake here is a retaliation claim, and we have to look carefully at the words of the statute to see whether or not, under the facts of this case, it's appropriate to infer that she engaged in opposition, therefore falling within the confines of the retaliation clause. So retaliation is what is the clause that's at stake. In our circuit, both Judge Doty and now Judge Magnuson have held that the language of Title VII does not include a statement of the type that Ms. Shirandara made. She didn't engage in protected activity because she didn't oppose a practice and have a good faith belief that that practice was illegal.
Also, what the U.S. Supreme Court in Crawford rather
We look to Crawford, Your Honor, for the proposition that a person may oppose within the meaning of the retaliation clause of Title VII, even if that person doesn't initiate the dialogue. But in Crawford, the communication took place after the episode had happened. The individual was talking about what she experienced at work and made it clear that she thought that was wrong. Here, the EEOC is arguing for something that it calls implied opposition. We think of that as sort of anticipatory opposition. So make a statement, nothing has happened yet, you don't know which way the employer is going to come down, and yet if you don't get what you asked for, now you can claim retaliation. There's no indication whatsoever that she thought not grant, that first of all, that she thought North Memorial had to grant the accommodation, and second of all, that she thought that not granting it was illegal. Those are sort of flip sides of the same coin. But she made it very clear that she wanted to negotiate with North Memorial. Had she thought that North Memorial had an obligation to grant an accommodation, there would be nothing to negotiate. So her continued negotiation, her back and forth, her multiple variations of what she would do going forward really is what led North Memorial to conclude they couldn't rely on her to work on those Friday nights. And that is sort of the sum and substance of the case. Whether there are fact disputes or not that the court might look to, at the end of the day, this is a case in which she cannot make out a prima facie case of retaliation. And even if she does, the employer had a legitimate non-retaliatory reason for its action. There is no evidence of pretext in the record. That means that she prevails. The issue of pretext was fully briefed before the district court. It was considered. There were questions asked related to it in the depositions that were taken. And Judge Doty engaged with us on that very issue in the context of that oral argument.
Is the threshold issue, though, whether it's protected?
Yes, Your Honor, the threshold question is whether it's protected activity. It is protected activity only if it is opposition to an unlawful practice. So she's got to have good reason to believe that denying the request is an unlawful practice. She never tells us she thinks it's unlawful, and in fact, her behavior indicates just the opposite. Her behavior is, I'll find a way to work this out, and again, multiple variations of what that meant over time. So she never engages in that protected conduct. Simply saying, I need an accommodation, without more, isn't opposition. That's as if I were applying for a job and I said, by the way, I want to be paid on the same equal basis as my male counterparts. I don't know if you're going to do that or not, but just making that statement doesn't rise to the level of opposition, even under the Crawford case, and certainly under the federal district court cases that have followed Crawford. Sorry, I didn't mean to. Let me talk a little bit about what Ms. Sharandara also didn't do. Besides not asserting her Title VII rights, she, in answer to Judge Erickson's question, I'll tell you that she testified in her deposition that she never told North Memorial that she would donate the money to charity. And there is absolutely no reason to require an employer to hire someone that they believe will not be reliable to provide patient care to ailing elderly patients. Remember, that's the position she was being hired for. And they were going out on a limb in some ways in hiring her into an advanced beginner program. She would have a special preceptor to work with her to help her transition to hospital care. Hospital care was new to Ms. Sharandara, and North Memorial was willing to help her achieve that level of sophistication in her work. But nonetheless, the EEOC would have you believe that it would have been better for North Memorial to hire her and then if she didn't show up to fire her. That's certainly not required by any law that I'm familiar with, and it sort of flies in the face of common sense. You had three experienced HR people who had dealt with Ms. Sharandara over a period of time and came to the conclusion, legitimately based on the information they were entitled to consider, we can't rely on her. She's not going to work. She doesn't understand the collective bargaining agreement. She doesn't understand the requirements of seniority in a hospital. She doesn't understand the importance of showing up when you're in direct patient care positions. And so we just can't count on her. Far better, in our mind, to make the decision at that point in time and to continue to work with her to find a different job. No. North Memorial liked her.
Wasn't that conclusion based on the fact that she was a Seventh-day Adventist and she had requested an accommodation?
No, Your Honor, it was not. It was based on the fact that her story about what she would and would not do changed multiple times during the course of the conversation. If she had a belief system that by which she said, I will not work on Friday nights, and that's non-negotiable, That's getting much closer to opposition. But we weren't there. In this case, she made a statement and then started to withdraw from that statement, sort of acquiesce to the notion of working on Friday nights over time. So North Memorial did, in fact, try to work with her, did try to accommodate her. I mean, again, there's no finding by the EEOC, and they haven't pursued this claim at all, that she was not reasonably accommodated. The case law has been clear since about 1977 in the TWA case that an employer doesn't have to violate its collective bargaining agreement to provide a religious accommodation to an individual. So that's not an issue. But even if it were, they went out.
She simply had to have had a good faith basis for believing that she was entitled to the accommodation, isn't that?
She had to have a good faith belief and communicate to her employer. She did just the opposite, Your Honor. She never said, I have to have this in order to work. She didn't. The fact that she changed what it was she was willing to do over a period of time, that's the factual basis for rejecting her as an applicant for employment. And then again, North Memorial liked her. They wanted to work with her. They looked for different jobs for her. There is no evidence in the record to suggest that was a sham or a pretext, as the EEOC argues right now. There is nothing that would suggest that was a case. North Memorial is an urban hospital. It is used to accommodating a variety of belief systems, both in its employees and in its patients. So this again, they wanted to work with her. They wanted to find something. They, in fact, in even one instance, and this is in Nick Wambacher's deposition, waived the minimum requirements in order to help her get a job. So to the extent that they were treating her differently because of her belief system, I think that would be a very, very difficult burden for the EEOC to bear to prove that there was pretext involved here. And remember, pretext, of course, means but for her religion, they would not have withdrawn the conditional offer. She would have to prove at the end of the day that North Memorial didn't have a legitimate business reason for withdrawing the offer and that its real reason was intent to discriminate. And when they continued to work with her, that seems to me that flies in the face of intent to discriminate. The EEOC also mentions the Aulis case. I agree, Judge Logan, with you. The Aulis case could not be more different than this case. There was a case, that's a case that this this circuit affirmed a jury verdict that was both on religious discrimination and on retaliation. And there, in that case, Mr. Aulis refused to participate in the mind-body sessions that his employer required. So clearly took a stand and didn't back down from that stand. That's opposition. And what Ms. Shirandara did isn't anywhere close to that. The EEOC also points to the ADA case law. We think that case law is inapposite for a variety of reasons. One is just frankly the skepticism that even this court has expressed as to whether asking for a reasonable accommodation under the ADA is a protected conduct. This court's been quite skeptical of that view. It has followed precedent in earlier decisions of the court. But that the language of the Kirkeberg case in particular makes quite clear that this court isn't so certain that the language of the statute can be stretched to include merely making a request.
Would you agree that the Heisler decision is still precedent?
It is in the ADA context, Your Honor. It's not precedential as to Title VII. This court has not made a determination on a bare-bones request for accommodation in the context of Title VII.
Would you also agree that the Cosette case... the Eighth Circuit said that we interpret ADA the same way as Title VII.
This circuit does look to ADA for certain items, but as Judge Doty correctly pointed out in this case, the ADA is a significantly different statute in the respect when it comes to what is protected conduct. So there's discrimination and there's retaliation in both statutes, but the ADA also has an interference clause, and that interference clause is what teaches us that in the broader context, words can have different meaning, and that is certainly the situation here. So we would urge this court not to be misled by the notion of referring to the ADA as guidance in a Title VII case. It simply is a different statutory scheme. It is far more robust, and it provides this additional third prong of protection that that Title VII simply doesn't provide. In terms of findings below, you know, the district court ruled strictly on the legal issue, and we would urge this court to affirm either on that ground or on the ground that there is no reasonable jury that could find that there was pretext here. So she simply can't make out the prima facie case, as I said earlier. Even if she could make out the prima facie case, we have clear evidence from deposition testimony that is unrebutted that the reason for the rejection of her as an applicant was simply the fact that she couldn't be counted on to show up for shifts. And these are not shifts, you know, pulling shots of cappuccino in an espresso bar, right? This is caring for critically ill people, many of whom are at the end stages of their life. So it was nothing that that North Memorial took lightly by any stretch. And at the end of the day, there is no evidence of pretext. So we think there are ample grounds for this court to affirm, and I will be happy to cede my remaining 2 minutes unless there are further questions. Thank you.
Does Brant have some time?
She does not. Oh, I apologize. She has 11 seconds.
I'll give you a couple minutes for all.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Your Honor. On the ADA cases, the provision that is cited, it's true that they don't, the ADA cases have all either recognized or held that the same language and the two provisions are the same in the ADA and Title VII. They all say that reasonable accommodation is protected activity without analysis. But those cases all cite the same provision, the retaliation provision, not the interference provision. So while I agree that the ADA is a different statute and in some ways is quite different, the two, the language of the two statutes is the same. And the cases that have recognized that the right to accommodation are covered cite to the retaliation statute, not the interference provision. And to address the point that it was anticipatory opposition, she was opposing having to work on her Sabbath when the hospital could potentially accommodate her. So it wasn't anticipatory. It was clearly fitting into identifying a conflict
with having to work on her Sabbath in violation of her religious beliefs. Then on the Aulis point, it's true, while the plaintiff and Aulis did say it was that the religious sessions were a cult and it made him uncomfortable, Shirandaro said, "I don't work Fridays, this conflicts with my religion," and expressed similar opposition. And the court in Crawford didn't give a base threshold of activity or pushback that you have to qualify as opposition. So under Crawford and Aulis, this court would be well within, supported by authority to hold that what Shirandaro said and did in this case was protected opposition. And then Judge Loken, you were asking for a case about an applicant and religious discrimination. The Supreme Court's decision in Abercrombie involved a woman who was applying to that store and wore a headscarf. That was was not a retaliation case, but it did talk about the fact that when you have a neutral rule applied to someone who has a religious conflict with it, that neutral rule does have to give way to accommodation, short of undue hardship, of course. Let's see, I think that is everything. But I would urge the entire panel to look at the Crawford decision very carefully, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case has been well briefed and argued, and we'll take it under advisement.